a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Here.
Jesus.
Here.
Olson.
Here.
Here. Quorum is present. You have the minutes, comments, corrections, action on committees. Move to
accept the minutes as committed.
Motion by Adelstein, second by Senator Olson. Comments on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved as read. A couple of announcements before we get started today. If you wish to testify, we'd ask that you sign the roster at the podium by the front door. Also, I would remind you and myself as well to check your cell phones. And we have, to start out with, I'd like to introduce our page. We got a new set of pages this week, so if you'd stand up and introduce yourself, tell us where you're from.
My name is Sammy Oxdell, and I'm from Platt,
Chocolate. And my name is Cassandra Murad, from Cuckoo Chocolate.
Thank you. Also, I think we have a pretty fair-sized crowd. We've got some, I know we have the junior class from Edmond Central. Can you stand up and introduce your class, yourself and your class?
Go ahead, everybody stand up. We are the junior government class from Edmond Central and Roscoe and Oliver.
Thank you, and welcome to your state capital. Any other schools here represented today? Welcome, Dakota Valley. Anybody else?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ferris.
Personal privilege, please.
Granted.
Thank you. I have my shadow with me, Julia Hendrickson from Mickelson Middle School there over at Brookings. So she's my shadow today.
Welcome. Okay, any other announcements before we get started today? Seeing none, we will start with Senate Bill 160, an act to repeal exemptions from sales and use tax from certain security and commodity brokers. Senate Bill 160 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony.
Mr. Chairman, honorable members of the committee, Senator Eldon Nygaard, District 17, representing Clay and Turner County. And I bring before you today Senate Bill 160, a bill that would repeal the exemption from sales and use taxes for certain security and commodity brokers. In a lot of states, every 2 years, the legislature meets and reviews exemptions from sales tax to see if they're still needed and up to date. I have here an 8-page document that shows that we have $526,547,000 worth of sales tax exemptions that are currently on the books. That's a lot of money. Everyone wants government. No one wants to pay for it. This act would merely add $1 million of revenue for our general fund by putting a 4% sales tax on the service that brokers provide in the sale or purchase of securities. So, for example, if you were to call A.G. Edwards or one of your securities brokers and say, sell my AT&T stock, there'd usually be a flat fee, perhaps $100, no matter what the size of the transaction, or how small or how large. It's going to cost you $100 to buy, sell. And that would be another $4 that the investor would be charged. It would not change the revenue, the income of the securities firm. It would not change the taxation of the bank that now banking has broadened into selling and buying and advising people on investments. It is paid by the investor or the consumer who's utilizing that service. So it's a tax on the service. And with that, I'll stand by for any questions of the committee.
Thank you. Further proponents? Are there other proponents?
Yes.
Hand to the pages, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Kathy Brachtelsbauer from Sioux Falls, and I'm here speaking on myself, my own behalf, because I've kind of followed this issue about the tax structure in South Dakota for quite a while now, and I'm passing out some graphs that a friend of mine put the information into graph form so you can see it readily. And I should say about this graph information that, first of all, that it's the latest information that we have on the right-hand side. We do have a little updates on the income side on the left, but since we didn't have updates for both sides, I just pass out this as it was when they were all the same years of information. And the ones on the left, is the incomes haven't changed a whole lot from that anyway, just a little bit. So I think it makes the same point, even if we had tried to change it. So this is pretty graphic information about, first, the income levels in the state for different quintiles of earnings. And you'll see on the far left is the lowest income South Dakotans and their average pay earnings. And then the next 20% of the population. The third column is the middle 20%. Then the next 20%. And the 20% with the highest income is broken into three columns because there's so much difference among those. That 15%, and the next to last column should say 4%, not 15, if you would make that change. It's 4% of the population. And then the farthest right column is 1%. And the same thing happens on the right-hand side. I have that same mistake where the next to last column should be 4% of the population, not 15. I'm sorry, I didn't get that corrected before I made the copy. So the point I would like to make is that the South Dakota tax structure is highly regressive, meaning that the lower incomes pay a higher portion of their incomes in local and state taxes, of all kinds of local and state taxes, all kinds. And I think this bill in particular would not be a regressive tax. So I just had to come and support that, because it's very nice to see something that's not a regressive tax that we can support that makes our tax structure even so slightly more progressive instead of regressive. So I just wanted to make a pitch for that, because I've been privileged to be one of the people who does the interviews for the Salvation Army Toy Town, where they get ready for Christmas and all the things the Salvation Army does for people. And we go over in quite great detail with hundreds of people their family financial situation. And, of course, I've never run into anybody with any kind of a payment for securities and commodities services. So I want to support this tax, and I hope you will. Thank you. I mean, support removing the tax exemption. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents? Any other proponents? Seeing none, we will move to, I'm sorry?
Opponents.
Opponents. Opponents are Senate Bill 160.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am Bob Gray, representing myself today. Senate Bill 160 has a couple flaws with it, and I think this is why we exempted in the first place. Most dollars that that are in investment accounts are qualified dollars, meaning they're retirement dollars. They're in IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, pension funds, and so forth. So supposing we could actually apply a tax to the services rendered on those accounts, you would be taxing people's retirement accounts. I'm not sure that's the direction any of us want to go. Second, while it's true that as a broker, I should step back, I am a financial advisor. As a financial advisor, if you came and bought 100 shares of stock, I could apply an extra amount to that transaction. But probably 90% of our business is not dictated by the revenue off of that business is not dictated by me. It's dictated by the mutual fund companies, the 401k provider. It's dictated by the insurance companies. And so should you apply this tax, I don't have a bottom line. I don't have a bill that I can add to, add 4% or 6%, whatever it may be, to the bottom of that fee. I get what I get. Essentially what what will happen here is that you will impose a gross receipts tax on securities brokers. And so, for example, let's just use round numbers. If I brought in $100,000 in revenue, if you applied 4% plus 2% local, that'd be 6%, $6,000. But I can't pass that on. Very limited circumstances. If you buy a stock, most people aren't buying individual stocks today. They're buying mutual funds and other securities. I can't pass that on, but to a very few number of my clients. And so essentially that becomes a gross receipts tax or an income tax on me. With that, I would urge your opposition to Senate Bill 160. I don't know that we want to be in the income tax business. I don't know that we want to be in the business of taxing retirement accounts. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bob Miller. I'm the Government Affairs Officer of Bank West, and I'm also their registered lobbyist. Bank West operates a brokerage department within its bank. We provide full-service brokerage services to our customers and clients. Bank West also, under the provisions of 1043, pays a state income tax. Now, we don't have an income tax in South Dakota. We call it a bank franchise tax, but it is, in fact, a gross income tax on banks. When we charge our brokerage customers a fee, we calculate into that fee the bank franchise tax. It's part of your fee. Now you're asking me to add a sales tax onto the brokerage service that we've already paid a bank franchise tax on. So essentially, we're taxing tax, we're tax on a tax, but we're taxing our customers twice. Whereas if a customer goes to another brokerage firm that is not associated with a bank, they're only taxed once. So we're creating something here that is very unfair to the banks, and we'd ask you to please not allow that to happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Rip Reines. I'm a registered lobbyist and the executive director of South Dakota Campaign for Liberty. I come here today with over 600 signed petitions, just signed last week, urging y'all to stop the tax hikes. If I may just read to this. This one says to the Senate State Affairs Committee, whereas common sense dictates that government should live within its means, and whereas many South Dakotans simply cannot increase their spending under the current economic conditions, and whereas tax increases at this time would be a heavy financial burden on the families and individuals of the state, whereas the people of South Dakota overwhelmingly support efficient state government and are strongly opposed to big government spending, and whereas there are numerous areas of the state spending that could be reduced without significantly affecting the appropriate functions of state government, this one signed by Brenda Simon of Tolstoy, respectfully urge the committee to oppose all tax increases during the 2011 legislative session and to balance the state budget by reducing the deficit with appropriate reductions in state spending. This particular bill taxes senior citizens' retirement accounts, which are being robbed by the Federal Reserve because their interest income is significantly reduced due to the low interest rate policy. So I would just urge that we not add to their current issues with their interest income that they get from their investments. And on behalf of South Dakota Campaign for Liberty, I urge you to oppose this bill. Thank you.
Further opponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm Zach Lautenschlager. I represent both the South Dakota Tea Party Alliance, and I also represent South Dakota Campaign for Liberty. I'd ask the pages to deliver these petitions to the committee. I just want to echo what has been said in opposition to Senate Bill 160. Just the whole stack. If you just want to, yeah, just set the whole stack in front of Chairman Roden, please. Thank you. I would also point out, as we go through the bills on today's calendar, that those petitions do apply to other bills which will be brought up. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Further opponents? Any other opponents? Seeing none, Senator Nygaard, I would give you a brief rebuttal.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Senator Eldon Nygaard, Senate Bill 160 does not increase taxes. It spreads the tax base out to more people. It doesn't change the tax rate. It spreads it out to a larger base. And going back to the bank franchise tax is based on the revenues that the bank makes. So the $100 fee on selling or buying stock for a customer is not changed any. They merely collect the 4% tax for the Department of Revenue in the state. That is nothing that could be taxed again. We had a revolution a good number of years ago about double taxation, and that is something we don't do today. And so that is irrelevant. The revenue is not changed by that 4% tax. If your bank franchise tax is based on just the fee that you charge, not any state tax that you collect for the Department of Revenue. With that being said, I would like to see a positive vote on this, if we could. Thank you very much.
Thank you. With that, we will open the committee to questions. Any questions from the committee? Seeing no questions, we will open to discussion and or action. What are your wishes? Senator Gray.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I sort of thought maybe I wouldn't make a motion on this since I testified for it, but if no one else is going to open their mouth, I'm always good for that. I, at this time, would move Senate Bill 160 to the 41st day.
Motion by Senator Gray. Is there a second? Second by Senator Garnos. Comments on the motion?
Well, I gave most of mine in testimony. I think it's... I think this has been exempted for good reason. I think it's far more complicated than collecting a tax on a transaction, which happens very little in today's business environment. Generally, the commissions that are collected through other companies, largely out-of-state mutual fund companies and insurance companies, and so it really does become a gross receipts tax on brokers. I'm not sure that's what we're really after here. And then further, as I mentioned before, it really becomes a tax primarily on retirement accounts. I can tell you in my business, my partners and I generally, I mean, the serious money is lifetime savings. It's 10, 20, 30 years of saving in retirement accounts for retirement. And I don't know that any of us should want to tax people's retirement.
Thank you. Further comments? Senator Frerichs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think, I guess, something that I'd like to address a little bit as far as being able to pass on the tax, it kind of perked up my ears, and I only expected to hear some discussion like that over the next bill, which obviously deals specifically with farmers. But as a farmer, we have a hard time passing on our tax as well, so I guess I don't... feel too much for people when they say that it's a hard time to pass on a tax they have to pay. With that, I plan on supporting the bill today. I think it's definitely a little bit outside of the box thinking, and appreciate the senator for bringing it forward to our committee.
Senator Cutler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I want to thank Senator Nygaard for bringing the bill to us to help us think about these things. But I'd be inclined to support the bill, but I understand there are some mechanical problems with how the tax is collected, and we certainly, I don't think, want to start collecting tax on retirement accounts. So if there was a way to clean the bill up to satisfy some of the concerns about A, double taxation, and B, taxing retirement accounts, I would be inclined to support that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further comments? Any other comments? Well, just briefly, I would comment that I intend to support the motion to defer to the 41st day for several reasons. I think for starters, at this point, we would be sending the wrong message if we pass this bill. I think it does represent a tax increase, not to mention the fact that I think that it would probably garner the governor's veto, although I don't know that. Nobody from his office testified today. But I think, again, that we would send the wrong message. I think that we shouldn't be rushing to try and find ways to increase taxes, that our number one priority should be finding appropriate cuts and following those. So with that, if there are no further comments, the motion is to defer to the 41st day, Senate Bill 160. All those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Edelstein? Senator Cutler?
Aye.
Burks?
No.
Barnos?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
And Roden?
Aye. Motion carries. Senate Bill 160 is deferred to the 41st day. We will now move to Senate Bill 166, an act to repeal certain sales tax exemptions relating to agricultural machinery parts, repairs, and maintenance. Senate Bill 166 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony.
Good morning, Senate State Affairs Committee and Mr. Chairman. Senator Alden Nygaard, on behalf of Clay and Turner County, appears once again. In an effort to spread the tax base, not to increase the tax. The page is handing out a agricultural phenomena called a hoghouse amendment to this bill. And so Senate Bill 166 is... I don't even have a copy of the bill here anymore. Would be hoghouse to delete everything after the enacting clause and insert Section 1, that Chapter 1045, be amended by adding thereto a new section to read as follows. There is hereby imposed a tax at the rate of 4% upon the gross receipts of any person from the engaging in the business of renting mini storage units, self-storage units, or storage space. And Chapter 1046 in Section 2 would be amended by adding thereto a new section to read as follows. An excise tax is hereby imposed on the privilege of the use of mini storage units, self-storage units, or storage space in this state at the rate of 4% of the rental payments for the use of the property. And there would be a subsequent title amendment, too. And so we're no longer here to discuss the sales tax on farm equipment, but to discuss a matter that when they initially came out, people who rented storage units paid sales tax. And then it's my understanding the history of this exemption is that then the people who built storage units came forward and lobbied for a passage of an exemption. Now, so it was not the people paying the 4% tax that paid the that came forward. It was the people who had to collect the tax for the state. And with that, if there's some more history you'd like to hear on this, Mr. Bruce Christensen, who is the Director of Audit in the Department of Revenue, is here and could perhaps give you some further background on that. I'll stand by for any further questions.
Thank you. Further proponents? Any other proponents? Seeing none, we will open to opponents.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Zach Lautenschlager, I represent the South Dakota Tea Party Alliance today. Mr. Chairman, do I need permission to speak both to the bill and to the amendment?
I would request that you limit your comments to the amendment that's been proposed by the sponsor, because even though it's not been moved, we will be, since it was offered by the prime, that will be the bill that's in front of us.
Thank you for that clarification. This is not an amendment that we had seen before. We would point out that ultimately we're once again looking at what is in effect an income tax, and it's a gross receipts tax upon the storage business. We'd also point on that that would be, some of that at least, would be passed on to the storage customer in higher prices. I do have some personal experience having worked for a while at a storage business, and I can say that this is, by and large, among the poorest people in our state. People who are moving to our state often, you know, need a place to store their household items, and this would obviously create more burden upon them. Would draw your attention to the petitions that were delivered in the last bill, just to reference them so that they are on record on this bill. I believe they will be referenced again, but it would point out that that is, there are many people across this state who do see these tax increases as a burden, and that they would burden the already stressed budgets of many individuals in this state. And so we'd respectfully urge the defeat of this bill, even if it is amended. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents?
Rip Reines, representing South Dakota Campaign for Liberty. This is a tax increase. I didn't see any tax decreases in the measure, so I'm not sure how you can argue that it spreads the tax base. We would urge the committee to oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Other opponents? Any other opponents? Before I move to questions from the committee, I think I'll take the liberty of asking the first question directed at, I think it's Bruce Christensen. Is that who you referred to? And I don't want to put you on the spot, and understanding you're not testifying as an opponent or proponent, but I think it would be beneficial if maybe you could give us a little background information on how we got from point A to point B with the storage units.
Okay. Bruce Christensen, South Dakota Department of Revenue, Director of the Audit Division. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. The green light is on. Is that? Oh, no. Now it's on. I'm sorry. Again, Bruce Christensen, South Dakota Department of Revenue, Director of the Audit Division. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. The department taxed mini storage for a long time. A couple years ago, there was a Supreme Court case, and now I can't think of who took a Supreme Court, but went to Supreme Court, and we lost Supreme Court decision that it was subject to tax. From that point on, it became exempt, and we ended up having to go back and do refunds of the tax to the mini storage owners.
Okay. Thank you. With that, Senator Nygaard, I would give you a brief rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Eldon Nygaard, District 17. Well, as I just spoke to Bruce as he was taking his seat, this does not, the fact that the Supreme Court holding back then required refund, does not mean that we can't correct this matter now and collect those taxes. This is not an income tax. has nothing to do with anybody's income. It has to do with renting a storage locker and paying a tax on that space that you... it doesn't affect the income of the proprietor who owns and operates that storage unit. It doesn't drop to his bottom line at all. All he is a collector of the tax for the state of South Dakota. And again, it's just a move to collect some of this $526 million worth of tax dollars that have been exempted out due to private interests in different areas. And at the same time that we cut government and cut spending, other things are being cut. Revenues have been cut, as we all know. So it's just one more step in trying to look, as I said in my earlier testimony in the prior bill, a lot of states review these exemptions every 2 years and see if they're still needed, if they're necessary to support a new industry or to continue an industry that doesn't have the profit that it needs. This doesn't have anything to do with their profit, doesn't have anything to do with the income tax, and we keep it at 4% to keep it in line with the streamlined sales tax objectives that we hold in an attempt to collect taxes across state lines. With that, I'll finish my testimony and urge your support of this token bill.
Thank you. With that, we will open up to questions. I will start. Senator Nygaard, you might have mentioned the fiscal impact. I didn't catch it. If you did, do you know what that number is?
Yes, just a moment.
If you need some time to find that, we can move
yeah.
on to other questions.
It'll just take me a second here. Only 8 pages of exemptions, sir. Any help, Bruce?
I'll just open it up for other questions, and you can find that, and we can take that later. Any other questions from the committee? Any other questions? Sir Nygaard.
It's estimated by revenue $1 to $1.5 million worth of tax would be collected.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, Senator Nygaard. Seeing none, we will open the committee to comments and or action.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Garnos.
I'd make a motion to amend the bill with 166RA.
Motion to amend 166RA, second by Garnos, second by Frerichs. Comments on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. I take just 1 second, since we have a couple government classes, to explain what the term hoghouse means. A hoghouse amendment is a term used in South Dakota as long as an idea is germane to the title, the sponsor or anyone else can attempt a hoghouse, which basically completely guts the bill and inserts totally different language. The history was back to SDSU back in the 40s, I believe, had legislation to build a building on campus, and they prepared an amendment to change the funding to allow them to build a hog house on the campus. And so the term hog house amendment was invented and stuck, and that's pertinent only to state government in South Dakota. Now that we have our history lesson and the bill has been hog housed, further comments and or action on Senate Bill 166 as amended? Senator Teason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I presume that we're not going to have hogs in the storage units. Never mind.
I remember my policy on preparatory comments.
The sponsor said at one point in his summary that this was something about a token. And unfortunately, I think that's what it is. I personally think that a more maybe a two-year review of our sales tax exemptions is in order for South Dakota. I wouldn't mind going through that process. We have an awfully long list. Some of those are certainly very legitimate and probably too complicated to collect for the revenue that we're going to get from it. I was actually looking forward to a discussion about the unhoghoused Senate Bill 166, which would involve substantial income, you know, for the state. So while I would like to see that discussion, and I'd like to see it sort of in its entirety, and I think sort of this last-minute piecemeal approach by taking one exemption and substituting another exemption is probably the not the right process. So I'll be supporting the deferral. Thank you.
Senator Cutler.
Mr. Chairman, I move do pass on Senate Bill 166 as amended.
Motion by Senator Cutler. Is there a second? Is there a second? Seeing none, the motion dies for lack of second. Further comments and or action?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
I move we defer the amended bill to the 41st day.
Motion by Senator Johnson. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Senator Gray. Comments on that motion? Senator Cutler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. The reason I support this is that historically we had collected this as a tax. This, I think, we could look at in a little different light than maybe some of the other proposals that are going to come before the committee or have come before the committee in terms of exemptions. This was really never meant to be exempted, and the state of South Dakota believed it was a part of our tax policy until the Supreme Court said otherwise. And so for that reason, this really just closes a loophole. I think in looking at our tax structure, for me, this is an easy call because we historically believed that we were going to be taxing storage units, and for many years we collected that tax in good faith. For a tax base to work, for sales tax to work in South Dakota, we can't let these things slip through the cracks. This tax is only fair if it's equally applied, and I realize that we have to weigh each measure that comes before us, but I don't think we should be so gun-shy and afraid to close a loophole that exists that until the court said otherwise, we had this tax on our books. And even though, granted, it's $1 million or $1.5 million, that's still $1 million to the general fund that we really should be collecting on these types of transactions. I can't think of really any reason why we shouldn't. In the past, we didn't exempt them, and so I'm a little disappointed that I couldn't get a second on the do pass motion because I think this is a little different policy that we're looking at here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Further comments? Any other comments? Well, I would just make a couple brief comments because I think Senator Cutler made some legitimate points, and I'm kind of torn on this issue too because I think that it is a matter of equity and fairness. I think we've had the history. There isn't a good reason that I can see that they aren't included in the sales tax equation as far as, you know, I don't know how many years it was that we taxed them with basically a sales tax, but it was just the last couple of years that they were exempted because of the Supreme Court case. So I don't think that it's really out of line that to think that we should address this. I will temper that by saying that I agree with Senator Teason's comments that maybe we should do this with a larger audience and be more inclusive in reviewing all of our exemptions and sales tax. So With that, I wanted to clarify that I do not believe that Senator Cutler is at all out of line in making a motion that we further discuss this, even though I will not be supporting, or I will support the motion to defer. Any other comments? Seeing none, the motion then is to defer to the 41st day. Senate Bill 166, all those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, call the roll.
Senator Adelstein? Cutler?
No.
Barracks?
Aye.
Barnos?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Bolson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye. Motion carries. Senate Bill 166 will be deferred to the 41st day. We have up next on the calendar Senate Bill 174, which was an act to temporarily increase the state sales and use tax to fund the state budget shortfall and to declare an emergency. I am going to defer that bill. We will hold that over until Monday. Till next Monday. I also understand that can create confusion, and I would ask that if anybody traveled to Pierre to testify on this bill, either as a proponent or opponent, I don't want that travel to be in vain, and I would offer the opportunity for you to come forward and present testimony, again, only for those folks that citizens that have traveled, made a special trip to Pierre to offer testimony on that. Yes, Senator Johnson.
I'm just going to move.
And again, I apologize if this is any inconvenience, but I offered that to the prime sponsor, one that's bill held over, and understanding that we will.
Well, thank you for letting me testify now, since we drove through some pretty bad conditions and had to stop for the night on the way and everything to get here. So I appreciate your listening, and I hope that you can still remember all this by next Monday, because I know you have so much that you're dealing with. And I have to say that I appreciate the attempt of any of you that are trying to fill budget holes and find ways not to cut. Oh, I forgot to say my name. I'm sorry.
Well, a couple things. I'd ask you to state your name and then, for the record, specify which side you're
on. I'm sorry. I forgot. I'm Kathy Brachtelsbauer from Sioux Falls. I'm speaking for myself, and I'm speaking the way this bill is written. I have to speak in opposition to the bill. But I do want to say that I appreciate the efforts of people to try to find ways to avoid cuts to education and Medicaid, especially because we know those are going to be very harmful. But to raise the sales tax on everything that sales tax is on, I think is something that's really unfair. And I refer you also to the chart that I handed out earlier, so you'll have that in front of you for this. For my comments, this bill raises the sales tax just over the summer months, and so you need to think about summer, even though it's kind of hard to do today. But in the summer, the kids are out of school, and so I want you to keep that in mind next Monday when you talk about this bill, because kids are not getting their lunches at school. They're home, they're active, they eat all day, and it's a bigger expense for the families to have to buy groceries over the summer. And the sales tax in this bill, as it's written, does not exempt food from sales tax, and it makes no reduction in the tax on food to go along with the increase in the sales tax. I think a lot of people would be a lot more supportive of this effort if it took some sales tax off food at the same time as raising the sales tax on everything else that the sales tax applies to. So I hope that makes some sense what I'm saying. I passed along the baby formula, and what it shows right now on this one can, which doesn't last very long if you have a baby, you know, it's got already, this one can, 88 cents sales tax on it. This bill would make that tax $1.03, just the tax, not counting the cost of buying the baby formula. Now, this baby formula, this particular can, is just for normal baby. There are cans of formula that cost several times what this can cost. There are cans of formula that already have a tax of over $2 on just a can of formula that only lasts 2-3 days. It might last 4 days if your baby's really, really small, but that doesn't last long because babies grow and they go through a lot more formula a lot faster. And if you've had a baby around lately, you know that babies are very expensive. There are lots of things that are involved with babies that are very expensive, and formula is just one big one that's a recurring thing, especially if you have a highly allergic baby. There's a woman here in the Capitol today. She's cleaning the bathrooms right now as we speak. Her name is Mandy. And she doesn't get food stamps for her family. She has children. She says their food bill is about $800 a month. The reason it's so high is that her little son has a lot of allergies. So she's one of those moms that had to buy the more expensive formula and now has a high food bill just because of having to avoid certain things and buy certain special things for her family. And so that's the kind of family she's very concerned about the ideas of raising sales tax. It's the kind of family that spends a lot more higher portion of their budget on food than other things. And so that's the kind of family that's over here at this end of the chart that probably even has a higher than 11% of income going for sales tax. So I want you to keep that in mind. Another thing that you need to know to make sure you know is if you were going to put some kind of change in this bill to drop the sales tax on food at the same time, you should know that that is allowed by the streamlined sales tax agreement. You're allowed to have a different rate of sales tax for food and for heating bills. So just so that you know that in case somebody decides to make this bill friendlier by taking sales tax off food at the same time. So I wanted to mention that. And the last thing I want to mention is that nursing homes in South Dakota pay a lot of sales tax. Even nonprofit ones pay sales tax on all their supplies, which is a lot of stuff they buy, and all their food, which is a huge part of their budgets. And hospitals don't, but nursing homes too. And you need to know that because the Medicaid cuts will also affect the nursing homes. So you want to keep that in mind. So I appreciate your taking my testimony today, and I appreciate your keeping these things in mind next Monday. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, before we move on to the next bill, I got a note. I assume maybe it's from one of the teachers, but a question about the motion on 41st day. And for the benefit of the students here, a motion to defer a bill to the 41st day, understanding that a session only has 40 days, is a polite way of putting a bill to sleep. And that's a polite way of saying we kill it. Okay, so when you hear a motion to defer to the 41st day, that's the same as a tabling motion as far as killing a bill, just a friendlier manner to do so. Also, the difference between a tabling motion and a deferral motion, a tabling motion ends all debate. There's no preparatory remarks, but you move to table, no more debate, end of discussion, you vote. If you make a motion to defer to the 41st day, it still allows debate and discussion on the bill. Okay, with that, we will move to, again, Senate Bill 174 is being deferred, and we will take up Senate Bill 79, an act to provide for the application of lien technologies to certain state governments process and to provide for prioritization and oversight of the lien government program. Senate Bill 79 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark Johnston, State Senator, District 12. I do have a handout. And have those been distributed? Great. Thank you. We all came to Pierre on December 7th to hear a budget address from former Governor Rounds, his last budget address, And I think the theme of that budget address was cut, cut, cut. Well, we came back about a month and a half later after the session was had started and Governor Dugard presented his budget, and And the theme of cut continued. And even in some cases, I've heard it referred to as thousands of cuts. And it got me thinking. Back in 1987, I was a young man right out of college. My first job, I worked for a transportation company. And the company I worked for had begun a journey of continuous improvement and looking for efficiencies, how the company could continue to move forward to bring more value to their customers. And I remember going through a short training program, we were all asked to come up with new ideas as employees to make our organization more efficient. And the first thing that I thought about was the impact of tire pressure in relationship to fuel economy of semis. And so I designed this continuous improvement project to have the individuals that fueled our trucks every day whenever they put fuel in a truck, they'd measure tire pressure. Doesn't sound like a real big thing, but at the end of the day, after the length of the study, it was determined that 8% of the trucks, of our trucks running up and down the road, were driving on underinflated tires. But even though 8% of the trucks were underinflated, it had a 15% impact on fuel economy. When you're running on an average of 125,000 miles a year, with an average fuel economy of about 6 miles per gallon, we made about a $50,000 positive impact to our bottom line just in fuel economy, just by measuring the tire pressure. That was back in 1987. And so here we are in 2011, and our government continues to talk about cuts, cuts, cuts. Well, I think it's time that we have a discussion about bringing a continuous improvement mindset and working with the administration and we as a legislative body to work with them to change the mindset, how our employees look at their work to find the efficiencies within the different agencies, departments, and in many cases, the processes of state government to streamline, to drive out waste, and ultimately provide more value back to the taxpayers of South Dakota. So we'll go into the presentation. Lean, a lot of people ask me, what the heck are you talking about with lean? Is it a lean, L-I-E-N? You know, there's lots of leans out there on different products. I think we've had a couple lean bills that have probably not passed, but here's lean, L-E-A-N. Senate bill, it's an act to provide for the application of lean techniques to certain state government processes and provide for prioritization and oversight of the lean government program. As I mentioned earlier, lean's an approach to improving capacity and service while reducing waste, costs, and increasing revenue. Lean has really progressed over the last 30 years. So a lot of the work that went into this bill was done in conjunction with the Lean Institute. It's a formal not-for-profit organization in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And as I mentioned earlier, Lean was first developed to improve the results and competitive advantage in manufacturing companies. Some of the first education I received in Lean came from a gentleman that had spent time in Japan. Post-World War II, after the war and a lot of their manufacturing environment was decimated. And I think we could all think back to the 60s, 70s, and probably into the 80s when we talked about Japanese products It may have been not the most favorable impression we had of Japanese products. They were cheap. They were junk. There was not a good quality. And the Japanese realized this. And so they engaged an individual, an American, by the name of W. Edwards Deming. Dr. Deming was an efficiency expert and arguably one of the modern-day heroes of business management. And he taught the Japanese some of the same tenets that we're talking about today. And after a continuous culture change in the Japanese economy, the impression of Japanese products improved, but also the real the products that were developed were some of the highest quality, the lowest cost. And Lean has today evolved to apply to service companies, healthcare, utilities, not-for-profits, education, and government. A lot of companies in South Dakota today, including healthcare, manufacturing, my organization, Sanford Health, is a proponent and a practicer of Lean. Avera Health does. I know Daktronics does. Sherco Manufacturing, and I've got written testimony from other companies in South Dakota that use the Lean methodology. Lean focuses on what are the key processes in all agencies, what services they are delivering, and how much of what is being done is value added. Essentially, what the taxpayer truly needs and is willing to pay for versus non-value added. And I think that's really the undertow of what I'm trying to accomplish here with Senate Bill 79. Instead of cut, we need to take a strong look at every department and agency in South Dakota state government to look for those efficiencies. It's not unusual to find improvement opportunities on the order of the magnitude of 50% where Lean is applied. I've got examples in some of the written testimony that companies have attested to that. You've got a slide in front of you, areas where waste is found. Handling, unnecessary motion, anything we handle does not add value. Inferior methods, what are we still doing the same way that we did in 1950 today in state government that needs to be modernized? Inspections, transportation moving, counting, delaying, waiting, storing, rework, multiple signatures. How many things in state government need multiple signatures that slow a process down and ultimately add waste? In many forms and fashion, this is administrative reorganization, looking at processes within government and finding ways to streamline. And that's why it's so important, as one of the tenets of this bill lays out, is it's a partnership between the state or between the executive branch of government and the legislative branch of government. This is a very complex tool, but at the same time, I tried to chunk it down into three usable forms. What are we really in existence for? To deliver continuously improving value-added service, which translates to capacity, quality, and speed to the taxpayers at a lower cost. 2, process improvement. Everyone should have an understanding of lean thinking in order to be able to identify processes within their system. How many times have we heard stories of talking to either our employees at work or employees in state government, you know, why the heck do we do that? I just don't understand. And if we didn't do this, what would that mean? And so everyone should have an understanding of lean thinking in order to be able to identify key processes, how they're performing, and apply the tools to make improvements in reducing cost, reducing waste, and providing more value to the taxpayers of South Dakota. The last and probably the most important tenet of this bill is people are the business. There needs to be a high respect for people. There needs to be a high respect for the state employees that do the work of the 800,000-plus citizens of the state of South Dakota. And this is an ideology. This is a methodology. And this is a culture. And there needs to be a constant search for how to improve things to reduce errors and who's responsible for the error. Lean tools in the hands of the workforce can cause great things to happen. When the people who work in the process are brought together in Kaizen events, Kaizen is a Japanese term for continuously improve. There's a lot of different models out there. My model is pretty simple. We take a week and train people to educate them on continuous improvement at the simplest form, but it's a culture, it's a way of thinking, it's a way to get them to think about their work differently. The people who work in the processes are able to quickly identify waste, make improvements, many times fixing a process that is frustrating to us as taxpayers that they may or may not have been thinking about for years, but they've really either never had the motivation to change or the encouragement to change. But I think it's time, these times call for us to consider new ways of thinking about our state government. A major misconception about lean is that with less people, services suffer. On the contrary, people working in processes that have gone through lean will be working on more value-added activities, have greater depth and breadth of job responsibilities, have greater job satisfaction, and will accomplish much more. Building more capacity, that's what lean does. It helps us reduce the work that doesn't mean anything and bring more value to the things that they do. Lean is a change. I've mentioned that a couple times. It's a change in the way things are looked at and done. As such, resistance to change will be high, and strategies to deal with this are available. You know, I've had a few discussions with folks who may or may not be other proponents or opponents about change. In so many times, I can believe state employees will be resistant to change because the way they always do it is security. But I argue in this environment, it's time to change. We have to look at all the processes and the activities to find the efficiency, drive out waste, because now more than ever, we have to find more value. In summary, lean makes a huge difference in lowering costs by being more efficient and effective while reducing waste. Lean increases capacity, customer service, and satisfaction. I'm not going to go through the whole list of benefits. We've talked about capacity. We've talked about reducing costs. We've talked about increasing customer satisfaction. I'd like to share with you some excerpts of written testimony that I received. I worked with Mr. David Owen, the executive director of the South Dakota Chamber of Commerce, and he posed the questions to some of his members, and I gave examples of different companies that use the lean methodology in their business today. I'm going to reflect specifically on a conversation I had with Dr. Al Kurtenbach, a former member of the South Dakota Senate, and one of the founders of Daktronics. His son Matt champions the lean thinking at Daktronics. And just a week before last, he told me, in all matter of fact, that the lean methodology helped Daktronics weather this last economic storm. Matt Kurtenbach pushed their employees harder and harder to find efficiencies, drive out waste of their processes so that they can continue to survive as a company. One of the questions that Mr. Owen formed to his members asked, do you think a basically service-oriented business structure like state government could benefit from this process? And probably the most telling response that I read was this. And this came from a company name has been left out. That's okay. But the conclusion is, I believe that lean theory is a terrific tool, but is not something to be entered into lightly. Cultural transformation is the single most difficult challenge for organizations, so be very picky about the processes you look at. I believe that service organizations could certainly benefit from lean theory. State government is a special case that probably has higher cultural resistance to change than any. Moreover, the financial incentives for improved efficiency in government aren't as direct as they are in business. The first step in attempting a lean government project would be to find a lean government expert, no matter how far you have to travel to do so. It's a big topic. It's new. But at the same time, we owe it to our employees, the employees of state government, to help them help themselves. And also, we owe it to the taxpayers of South Dakota. I mean, this last weekend, I had four legislative coffees in Sioux Falls. A lot of discussion revolved around the providers. A lot of discussion revolved around education funding. And in an era of cut, can we afford not to make an investment in the people who were entrusted to provide services to the citizens of South Dakota without giving them the tools and the education and the knowledge that they need to help us help the 800,000 people? The 800,000 South Dakotans to provide the most efficient, impactful government services available. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. Further proponents? Any other proponents? Seeing none, opponents? Are there opponents to Senate Bill 79?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Mike Mueller from the South Dakota Bureau of Administration. Senate Bill 79 adds a number of new processes for the Bureau, including collection of process summaries from all agencies, prioritizing them, coordinating lean analysis of each process, and soliciting no-cost private vendors to provide training and implementation. For other state government agencies, it also adds new duties and reports for the Governor's Office, the Department of Labor, legislative audit, and, in fact, all state agencies who must submit those process reports. We appreciate the goals that Senator Johnson has in bringing Senate Bill 79, including simplifying processes, reducing waste, setting performance metrics, and focusing on customer service, all of which serve to improve government and reduce its cost. There are goals that we all agree on. However, we do have reservations about establishing a specific commercial quality improvement program in state law. Governor Dugard has made it clear that efficiency in government is a high priority. We are just 30 days into the governor's administration, and a review of processes did begin with building the budget. And as an example, the Bureau of Administration will cut 8.5 FTE in its current budget proposal. Those reviews for government efficiency will certainly continue in ongoing efforts to meet those shared goals identified in Senate Bill 79. However, we would appreciate the flexibility to pursue those goals in various ways that may include the lean management program, but may also include other quality management techniques that can cross a wide variety of agency missions. And for those reasons, we would urge you to oppose Senate Bill 79. Thank you. I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. Further opponents? Are there other opponents? Seeing none, I would make the offer to Senator Johnson if you want to make some rebuttal comments before we go to questions.
Just quick, I wasn't sure if that was an opponent testimony or a proponent testimony. Probably the biggest thing that I want to bring forward is it's a we thing. You know, with a three-tier system of government, there are responsibilities that we have as a legislative body and that the governor has in the executive branch of government. And so while I applaud Governor Dugard for talking about efficiency, you know, we have a responsibility as a legislative body to the taxpayers of South Dakota to deliver a budget, as Mr. Mueller expressed, but also to work with the executive branch of government to look at efficient ways to deliver services to the taxpayers of South Dakota. I look at some of the examples that I didn't share with you. In the state of Iowa, they began implementing lean in 2003. And since lean was implemented, as an example, they've reduced the number of steps by 50% in medication, or excuse me, in Medicaid administration. 50%. Think about that. You know, one of the big planks of our budget's in Medicaid, and they've reduced the number of steps 50%. They've reduced the number of decisions by 81% and cut delay times by 69%. In the application for permits. And so those types of examples, when the tools are given to the employees in a particular department or agency, the number of efficiencies are huge. And so thank you, Mr. Chair, for the effort to give final comments on this bill.
Thank you. We will now go to questions, and I will start out with Senator Johnson. Is a lien, you know, every time I see it, it's capitalized. I assumed it was an acronym. You informed me earlier that it's not, but I am curious, is that a trademarked
It term? Is trademarked by the Lien Institute, the organization that I mentioned earlier, based in Cambridge.
Okay. What I'm getting at, question-wise, is there a fee or membership dues, or what is there a cost associated with associating yourself with that?
No,
that trademark.
No, there's not.
None.
Nope. Okay. Not to be a not to participate in Lean. Frankly, I've had a lot of emails back and forth with the leadership from the Lean Institute. Their CEO, their CFO, and one of their leading change agents. I think there's a fee to be a member of the Lean Institute, but there's not an ongoing cost for their services.
Okay. Further questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Garnos.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Johnston, what's a reasonable transition time? You mentioned that Iowa, for example, is doing this. What's a transition time to put this in place? Obviously, for lack of a better term, we heard concerns from, you know, the governor and his staff that things need to be put in place where training takes place, et cetera. What's a reasonable transition time? And obviously, it probably depends on the size of the state, the scope of the government.
Mr. Chair, thanks, Senator Garnas, for the question. You know, we could start tomorrow if we wanted. In doing some research, I talked to the School of Mines, I talked to South Dakota State, I talked to USD. The School of Mines probably has the most active lean management training program. They actually incorporate a lot of the lean methodology in all their coursework, because the students that they produce are going to manufacturers and businesses around the country that a lot of them use that. Again, it's an ideology. It's a way of thinking, and we could start tomorrow. But the one thing that I want to make certain known is we shouldn't like globally implement the lean methodology across all state government. I think working with the Bureau of Administration, the Department of Legislative Audit that's laid out in the bill, it would be best to pick some low-hanging fruit to get some wins, to work with employees to get them engaged in the process and engaged in a way of thinking, and then move from there onto other projects. And can, it's kind of like dropping a pebble in a pond. You start small and then work out. But for all intent and purposes, we could start tomorrow if we wanted to.
Further questions?
Senator Teason. Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. You said in your presentation that we train. Who does the training and who trains the trainers?
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Teason. Great question. There's a couple different theories about implementation. One is to hire a consultant, and I can give you lots of examples from the written testimony that I referred to earlier about companies who have actually done that. Leadership begins at the top when you implement lean. And the experience that I have, the experience that a lot of the companies in South Dakota have, is the key to success is to building an internal education system, training, doing our own training. Like, I'll just use for an example, Senator Teason, you and I could go to a week-long seminar and learn the basic tenets of lean. It's really pretty simple. But it really needs a change agent at the highest level of the organization, or at the highest level possible, to begin the implementation. The organizations that I'm familiar with, and probably the best way to do it is to do it ourselves with a little bit of training, because people have a lot more buy-in when you're part of the team instead of hiring an external consultant. That's my experience.
Sir Cutler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for Mr. Mueller, please. Mr. Mueller, I believe you mentioned in your testimony that you thought that perhaps there might be something in this that would preclude you from using other management techniques or tools. And I just wondered if you could be more specific about that or why you feel that way.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chairman. I think in establishing the lean management program as law in South Dakota, I'm not necessarily saying that it would preclude those other considerations, but you're certainly establishing what is the policy of the state. It's in law. It's something that we must follow.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Same question to Senator Johnston, then. If you feel there's other tools, does lean necessarily limit other management tools, in your opinion?
You know, that's a great question. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. That's a great question, and in some of the discussion I've had with the administration leading up to this, you know, that's been one of the key things. But there are other tactics that the state can use to maybe get at the same outcome, but I don't know if they will have as focused effort as using the lean methodology. And as I mentioned, as I gave the example earlier about the pebble in the water and start building, you know, finding the small successes that have a good impact, and then it just continues to grow. But in doing my research and in my own life over the last 20 some years, it works. And so that's why it formed the basis for this bill.
further questions? Senator Cutler.
Thank you. One further question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You may have said this, and I might have missed it. You mentioned Iowa. How many other state governments have implemented lean?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I know Connecticut has used it. Michigan uses it. Minnesota uses it. There's five total: Connecticut, Iowa, Michigan, Minnesota, and there's one other state that those are the ones that I know of.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Frerichs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question would be for Senator Johnston. In your previous life working in the executive branch of state government, at least to my knowledge, I believe you did, and did you attempt to, or from that vantage point, I mean, implementing lean, do you see it? Did you attempt to lean? And then a second part to that would be, can it work from that vantage point? We hear from Bureau Administration, but thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Frerichs, yes, back in 2003, 2004, I did lead a team of folks from South Dakota. We went down to Des Moines, to the state capital of Iowa, and spent a day or so with similar Bureau of Finance Management at that time, and met with the state of Iowa and looked at their processes, and they were quite a ways down the journey. And I think in some forms and fashion, the byproduct that came from that, I'll give one example, was the 2010 education initiative. There were tenets of lean throughout the 2010E initiative, and in some forms and fashion, the metrics and the things that we tried to implement within 2010E, without calling it lean, we were trying to do that within the 2010E.
Any other questions? Well, seeing no further questions, we are going to hold action on Senate Bill 79. We have another hearing on a bill dealing with lean on Wednesday. So, again, we will hold action, any further action, on Senate Bill 79. Well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, are there any announcements for the committee? Seeing none, I will entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by Olson, seconded by Gray. Comments on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Meeting is adjourned.